protective frontier, had injected me at last into his natives without a tremor of pain. I was free. Men crowded behind me in the corridor, blocking the way back. Drona's hand was sweating on my sleeve. He was a plastics connoisseur. Flipping his fingernail against a large, clear African mask, cocking his ear, "Can you hear it? The true ring of polystyrene." And going into raptures for me over a heavy chalice of methyl methacrylate, a replica ale. We were by a tower reactor. A strong paint thinner smell was in the air. Clear rods of some plastic casing out through an extruder at the bottom of the tower into cooling channels or into a chopper. The heat was heavy in the room. I thought of something very deep, black and viscous, feeding this factory. From outside I heard motors. Were they all leaving? Why was I here? Plastic serpents crawled endlessly to left and right. Chins of my escort tried to crawl out the openings in their clothes. I could do whatever I wanted. Black, radiant and deep, I knelt and began unbuttoning Drona's trousers, but two others took me by the arms and dragged me off into a warehouse area. Others followed or entered from other doors. Great curtains of styrene or vinyl in all colors, opaque and transparent, hung row after row from overhead. They flared like the northern lights. I felt that there was an audience waiting to begin. Drona and the men stretched me out on an inflatable plastic mattress. All around I watched a clear crumb air or of the light, said butadiene, and I heard beauty dying. Plastic rustled and snapped around us, clothes in ghost white. They took away my clothes. And then an exotic costume of summer, very tight at the waist, open at the crotch. It felt alive on me. "Forget leather, forget satin," shivered Drona. "Rolex, the material of the future." I can't describe its perfume or how it felt. The luxury, the moment it touched, brought my nipples up, swollen and begging to be bitten. I wanted to feel it against my cunt. Never war, before or since, aroused me quite as much as Imipolex. They promised me brassieres, chemises, stockings, gowns of the same material. Drona had strapped on a gigantic Imipolex penis over his own. I rubbed my face against it. It was so delicious. An abyss between my feet. Things, memories, no way to distinguish them anymore, went tumbling downward through my head. A torrent. I was evacuating all these out into some void. From my vertex, curling, bright-colored hallucinations went streaming. Baubles, amusing lines of dialogue, objet d'art. I was letting them all go. Holding none. Was this submission, then? Letting all these go? I don't know how long they kept me there. I slept. I woke. Men appeared and vanished. Time had lost meaning. One morning I was outside the factory, naked in the rain. Nothing grew. Something had been deposited in a great fan that went on for miles. Some tarry kind of waste. I had to walk all the way back to the firing site. They were all gone. Thanat had left a note asking me to try to get to Swinemünde. It must have happened at the site. There was a silence in that clearing once before, once in next year I was in America. Very deep in the jungle, we came on a flight of stone steps covered with vines, fungus, centuries of decay. The others climbed to the top, but I couldn't. It was the same as the day with Thanat in the pine forest. I felt a silence waiting for me up there, not for them, but for me alone. My own personal silence. Up on the bridge, the storm paused loud in the glass. Great weathers falling at random night, whap! The living shibble just for the rainbow edge of the sound. It takes a certain kind of maniac, at least a Polish cavalry officer, to stand in this pose behind such brittle, thin separation, and stare each blow full in its muscularity. Behind Protsalovsky, the clinometer bob goes to and fro with his ships rolling, a pendulum in a dream. Stormlight has turned the line black, black as his eyes, black cap cocked so tough and steady aslant the furrows of his forehead. Light clusters clear deep on the face of the radio gear, fans up softly off the dial of the Pylorus, spills out portholes onto the White River. Inexplicably, the afternoon has been going on for longer than it should. Daylight has been declining for too many hours. Corpuscents have begun to flicker now in the rigging. The storm yanks at rope and cable. The cloudy night goes white and loud in hues. Protalovsky smokes a cigar and studies charts of the Oderhaf. All this light, and lookouts watching from shore. Is this arm of the passage being kept in grease pencil X by beautiful X across some field of Russian plastic, inside where cobwebs whiten the German windows nobody needs to stand at, where phosphor grass ripples across the A-scopes, and the play you feel through the hand crank in the invisible teeth is the difference between hit and miss. Vaslav, is the pip you see there even a ship? In the zone, in these days there's simulation. Standing waves in the water, large drone birds, so well known as to have nicknames among the operators. Wayward balloons, flotsam from other theaters of war, Brazilian oil drums, whiskey cases stenciled for Fort Lamy. Observers from other galaxies, episodes of smoke, moments of high albedo. Your real targets are hard to come by. Too much fusion out here for most replacements and late draftees. Only the older scope hands can still maintain a sense of the over the watches of their durations, jittering electric green for what must have seemed at first forever. They have come to understand distribution, learned a visual mercy. How probable is the Anubis in this estuary tonight? Its schedule has lapsed, fashionably, unavoidably. It should have been through Svinemünde weeks ago, but the Vistula was under Soviet interdiction to the White Ship. The Russians even had a guard posted on board for a while. The Anubian ladies vamped them off long enough to single up all lines, and so the last reprise of Polish homeland was on, across these water meadows of the north. Radio messages following them in, clear one day and code an early and shapeless situation dithering between executioner's silence and the big time. There are reasons for an Anubis affair right now, and also reasons against, and the arguments go on, too remote to gather, and orders are changed hour to hour. Pitching and rolling furiously, the Anubis drives northward. Lightning flickers all around the horizon, and thunder that reminds the military men on board of drum fire announcing battle they're not sure now if they survived or still dream, wake up into and die. Weather decks shine slick and bare. Party litter clogs the drains. Stale fat smoke goes oozing out the galley portal into the rain. The saloon's been set up for baccarat, and filthy movies are showing in the boiler room. The second dog watch is about to come on. The watch settles like the soul of a kerosene lamp just lit into its evening routine. Partygoers stagger fore and aft, evening clothes decorated with sunbursts of vomit. Ladies lie out in the rain, nipples erect and heaving under drenched silk. Stewards skid along the decks with salvers of Dramamine and bicarbonate. Barfing aristocracy sag all down the lifelines. Here comes Slothrop now down a ladder to the main deck, bounced by the rolling off of alternate man ropes, feeling none too keen. He's lost Bianca. Gone fussing through the ship, doubling back again and again, can't find her any more than his reason for leaving her this morning. It matters, now that Margarita has wept to him across the stringless lyre and bitter chasm of a ship's toilet, of her last days with Blisero, he knows as well as he has to that it's the Escaret, after all, that's following him. It and the pale plastic Oslo Yumpf. That if he's been seeker and sought, well, he's also baited and bait. The Imipolex question was planted for him by somebody back at the Casino Hermann Göring, with hopes it would flower into a full imipolektik with its own potency in the zone. He knew Slothrop would jump for it. Looks like there are sub-Slothrop needs they know about, and he doesn't. This is humiliating on the face of it, but now there's also the even more annoying question, what do I need that badly? Even a month ago, given a day or two of peace, he might have found his way back to the September afternoon, to the stiff cock in his pants, sprung fine as a dowser's wand, trying to point up at what was hanging there in the sky for everybody. Dowsing rockets is a gift, and he had it, suffered from it, trying to fill his body to the pores and follicles with prurience, to enter, to be filled, to go hunting after, to be shown, to begin to scream, to open arms, legs, mouth, asshole, eyes, nostrils, without a hope of mercy to its intention, waiting in the sky paler than dim commercial Jesus. But nowadays, some kind of space he cannot go against has opened behind Slothrop. Bridges that might have led back are down now for good. He is growing less anxious about betraying those who trust him. He feels obligations less immediately. There is, in fact, a general loss of emotion, a numbness he ought to be alarmed at, but can't quite... can't. Russian transmissions come crackling out of ship's radio, and the static blows like sheets of rain. Lights have begun to appear on shore. Protulovsky throws a master switch and cuts off all the lights of the Anubis. St. Elmo's fire will be seen spurting at moments from cross ends, from sharp points, fluttering white as telltales about the antennas and stays. The white ship, camouflaged in the storm, will slip by Stettin's great ruin in silence. Rain will slacken for a moment to port and reveal a few last broken derricks and charred warehouses, so wet and gleaming you can almost smell them. And the beginning of marshland you can smell where no one lives. And then the shore again will be invisible as the open seas. The Oder Haff will grow wider around the Anubis. No patrol boats will be out tonight. White caps will come slamming in out of the darkness and break high over the bow, and brine stream from the golden jackal mouth. Count Waffner lurch aft in nothing but his white bow tie, hands full of red, white, and blue chips that spill and clatter on deck, and he'll never cash them in. The Countess Bibescu, dreaming by the forecastle of Bucharest 4 years ago. The January terror. The Iron Guard on the radio screaming, "Long live death!" And the bodies of Jews and leftists hung on the hooks of the city slaughterhouses, dripping on the boards, smelling of meat and hide, having her breasts sucked by a boy of 6 or 7 in a velvet Fauntleroy suit, their wet hair flowing together, indistinguishable as their moans now, will vanish inside, sudden whiteness exploding over the bow, and stockings ladder, and silk frocks over rayon slips make swarming moirés. Ardons go limp without warning. Bone buttons shake in terror. Lights be thrown on again, and the deck become a blinding mirror, and not too long after this Slothrop will think he sees her, think he has found Bianca again, dark eyelashes plastered shut and face running with rain. He will see her lose her footing on the slimy deck, just as the Anubis starts a hard roll to port, and even at this stage of things, even in his distance, he will lunge after her without thinking much, slip himself as she vanishes under the chalky lifelines and gone, stagger trying to get back, but be hit too soon in the kidneys, and be flipped that easy over the side, and it's adios to the Anubis and all its screaming fascist cargo, already no more ship, not even black sky, as the rain drives down his falling eyes now in quick needle strokes, and he hits without a call for help, just a meek tearful, "Oh, fuck," tears that will add nothing to the whipped white desolation that passes for the Oder Haff tonight. The voices are German. Looks like a fishing smack here, stripped for some reason of nets and booms. Cargo piled on deck. A pink-faced youth is peering down at Slothrop from midships, rocking in, rearing back. "He's wearing evening clothes," calling into the pilot house. "Is that good or bad? You're not with the military limit, are you?" "Jesus, kid, I'm drowning. I'll sign a form if you want." Well, that's howdy, partner, in German. The youth reaches out a pink hand whose palm is crusted with barnacles and hauls him on up. Ears freezing, salty snot pouring out his nose, flopping onto a wood deck that reeks with generations of fish, and is scarred bright from more solid cargo. The boat gets underway again with this tremendous surge of acceleration. Slothrop is sent rolling wetly aft. Behind them a great rooster tail foams erect against the rain. Maniacal laughter blows aft from the pilot house. "Hey, who or what is in command of this vessel here?"
"My mother."
The pink boy crouching beside him with an apologetic and helpless look.
"The terror of the high seas."
This apple-cheeked lady is Frau Knapp, and her kid's name is Otto. When she's feeling affectionate, she calls him the Silent Otto, which she thinks is very funny, but it dates her. While Slothrop gets out of the tuxedo and hangs it up inside to dry, wrapping himself in an old army blanket, mother and son tell him how they run black market items all along the Baltic coast. Who else would be out tonight during a storm? He has a trustworthy face, Slothrop does. People will tell him anything. Right now, seems they're headed for Swinemünde to take on cargo for a run tomorrow up the coast of Usedom. "Do you know a man in a white suit?" quoting Gary Tripping from a few eras back, "who's supposed to be on the strand promenade in that Swinemünde every day around noon?" Frau Knapp takes a pinch of snuff and beams.
"Everybody does. He's the white knight of the black market, as I am queen of the coastal trade."
"You're Springer, right?"
"Nobody else?"
"Nobody else." Up in his pants pocket, Slothrop is still packing around the chess piece,
old Zoira Boomer gave him. By it shall Springer know him.
Strothrop falls asleep in the pilot house, gets in 2 or 3 hours, during which Bianca comes to snuggle in under his blanket with him.
You're really in that Europe now, she grins, hugging him.
Oh, my goodness, Strothrop keeps saying, his voice exactly like Shirley Temple's, out of his control. It sure is embarrassing. He wakes to sunlight, gulls squealing, smell of No. 2 fuel oil, the booming of wine barrels down racketing planks to shore. They are docked in Swinemünde by the sagging long ash remains of warehouses. Frau Knopp is supervising some offloading. Otto has a tin can of honest-to-God Bohnenkaffee simmering.
First I've had in a while, Slothrop, scorching his mouth.
Black market, purrs the silent Otto. Good business to be in.
I was in it for a while.
Oh, yes, and he's left the last of that Bodine hashish, hasn't he? Several fucking ounces, in fact, back on the Anubis. Wasn't that clever? See the sugar bowl do the tootsie roll with the big bad devil's food cake.
Nice morning, Otto remarks.
Slothrop puts his tux back on, wrinkled and shrunken and almost dry, and debarks with Otto to find Der Springer. It seems to be Springer who's chartered today's trip up the coast. Slothrop keeps looking around for the Anubis, but she's nowhere in sight. In the distances, gantries huddle together, skeletal, presiding over the waste that came upon this port so sudden. The Russian assault in the spring has complicated the layout here. The white ship could be hiding behind any of these heaps of dockyard wreckage.
Come out, come out.
The storm has blown away. The breeze is mild today, and the sky lies overhead in a perfect interference pattern, mackerel gray and blue. Someplace military machines are rooting and clanking. Men and women are hollering near and far in Russian. Otto and Slothrop dodge them down alleys flanked by the remains of half-timbered houses, stepped out story by story, about to meet overhead after centuries of imperceptible toppling. Men in black-billed caps sit on stoops, watching hands for cigarettes. In a little square, market stalls are set up, wood frames and old stained canvas shimmering when the breeze passes through. Russian soldiers lean against posts, talking to girls in dirndls and white knee socks, all nearly still as statues. Market wagons stand unhitched, with tongues tilted to the ground and floors covered with burlap and straw and traces of produce. Dogs sniff among the mud negatives of tank treads. 2 men in dark old blue uniforms work their way along with hose and broom, cleaning away garbage and stone dust with salt water pumped up from the harbor. 2 little girls chase round and round a gaudy red kiosk plastered with chromos of Stalin. Workers in leather caps, blinking, morning-faced, pedal down to the docks with lunchboxes slung on handlebars. Pigeons and seagulls faint for scraps in the gutters. Women with empty string bags hurry by light as ghosts. A lone sapling in the street sings with a blockful of birds you can't see. Just as gaily said, out on the steel-littered promenade, kicking stones, watching the water, eyes idly combing the beach for the odd watch or gold eyeglass frame, waiting for whoever will show up, is the man. About 50, bleak and neutral-colored eyes, hair thick at the sides of his head and brushed back. Slothrop flashes the plastic knight. Der Springer smile bows.
Gerhard von Gerl, at your service.
They shake hands, though Slothrop's is prickling in an unpleasant way. Gulls cry, waves flatten on the strand. Slothrop says,
I have this kind of trick here. You'll have to... You say, Gerhard von what now?
This mackerel sky has begun to look less like a moiré and more like a chessboard.
I guess we have a friend in common. Well, that Margarita Erdmann saw her last night, yep.
She's supposed to be dead. He takes Slothrop's arm, and they all begin to stroll along the promenade.
Well, you're supposed to be a movie director.
Same thing. Lighting American cigarettes for everybody.
Same problems of control, but more intense. As to some musical ears, dissonance is really a higher form of consonance.
You've heard about Anton Webern. Very sad.
It was a mistake. He was innocent.
Ah, of course he was. But mistakes are part of it, too. Everything fits. One sees how it fits, yeah?
learns patterns, adjusts to rhythms. One day you are no longer an actor, but free now, over on the other side of the camera. No dramatic call to the front office, just waking up one day and knowing that Queen, Bishop, and King are only splendid cripples, and pawns, even those that reach the final row, are condemned to creep in two dimensions, and no tower will ever rise or descend. No, flight has been given only to the Springer.
Right, Springer, says Otto. Four Russian privates come wandering out of a bank of ruined hotel fronts, laughing across the promenade, over the wall, down to the water, where they stand throwing smooth stones, kicking waves, singing to each other. Not much of a liberty town, Swinemünde, Slothrop, Fils, von Gerlin, and Margarita, trying not to get personal, but some of his anxiety over Bianca must be coming through. Von Gerl shakes his arm, a kindly uncle. There now, I wouldn't worry. Bianca's a clever child, and her mother is hardly a destroying goddess. You're a comfort, Springer. The Baltic, restless Wehrmacht gray, whispers along the beach. Von Gerl tips an invisible Tyrolean to old ladies in black who've come out in pairs to get some sun. Otto goes chasing seagulls, hands out in front of him, silent movie style, looking to strangle but always missing his bird. Presently they are joined by a party with a lumpy nose, stoop weeks' growth of orange and gray whiskers, and oversized leather trench coat with no trousers on underneath. His name is Nerisch, the same Klaus Nerisch that aerodynamics man Horst Achtfaden fingered for the Schwarzkommando, the very same. He is carrying by the neck an unplucked, dead turkey. As they thread their way among chunks, big and little, of Swinemünde and the battle for it last spring, townspeople begin to appear out of the ruins and to straggle close on Von Gerl's landward flank, all eyeing this dead bird. Springer reaches inside his white suit jacket, comes out with a U.S. Army 45, and makes a casual show of checking its action. His following promptly dwindles by a half.
"They're hungrier today," observes Nerisch. "True," replies the Springer, "but today there are fewer of them."
"Wow," it occurs to Slothrop. "That's a shitty thing to say."
Springer shrugs. "Be compassionate, but don't make up fantasies about them. Despise me, exalt them, but remember we define each other. Elite and preterite, we move through a cosmic design of darkness and light. And in all humility, I am one of the very few who can comprehend it in toto. Consider honestly, therefore, young man, which side you would rather be on. While they suffer in perpetual shadows, it's always bright days."
Foxtrot. Bright days for the black market. That silver and gold makes it shine. From the coral sea to the sky blue Baltic, money's the mainspring that makes it all tick. Like a blinkin' beacon, there's a price tag peekin' from each décolletage divine. Be she green or scarlet, even mom's a harlot. It's the good Lord's grand design. Eh, and it's sunny days for the black market, 'cause silver and gold make it shine. Erich and Otto joining in here on three-part harmony, while the idle and hungry of Swinemünde look on, white-faced as patient livestock. But their bodies are only implied. Wire racks for pre-war suits and frocks, too ancient, too glassy with dirt, with passage. Leaving the promenade, they pause at a street corner while a detachment of Russian infantry and horsemen marches by.
"Gee, they're pouring in," notes Otto. "Where's the circus?"
"Up the coast, kid," says Nerisch.
"What's up the coast?" inquires Slothrop.
"Look out," warns Nerisch. "He's a spy."
"Don't call me kid," Otto snarls.
"Spy's ass," says Slothrop.
"He's all right," Springer pats them all on the shoulders. "Herr Gemütlich here. The word's been out on him for a while. He isn't even armed." To Slothrop. "You're welcome to come along with us up the coast. It might be interesting for you." But Slothrop is no dummy. He notices how he is getting funny looks from everybody now, including that Springer. Among the cargo headed up the coast are six chorus girls, wearing feathers and spangles under old cloth coats to save trunk space, a small pit band at different levels of alcoholic slumber, many, many cases of vodka, and a troop of performing chimpanzees. Otto's nautical, piratical mother has one of these chimps cornered inside the pilot house where they are going at it, the Frau with her insults, the chimp reaching now and then trying to slap her with his floppy banana peel.
Ulcerous impresario GMB Haftung is trying to get Otto's attention. He has a record of always making his appeals to the wrong personnel.
That's Wolfgang in there. He'll murder her.
Wolfgang's his prized chimp. Somewhat unstable, does a fair Hitler imitation, but has this short attention span. Well, vaguely, he'd better watch out for my mum. Framed here in her lozenge of hatchway, it's much clearer just how extensively this old woman has been around. She is leaning, lifting, big, sweet smile, just as toothy as can be, right into that Wolfgang, cooing at him, Deine Mutter. Say, she's never seen one of those critters before, Slothrop turning to Otto, surprising the youth with a face full of, call it, amiable homicide. Has she?
Ach, she's fantastic. She knows by instinct exactly how to insult anybody. Doesn't matter, animal, vegetable, I even saw her insult a rock once.
Ah, now,
really, yeah, a gigantic clump of felsitic debris last year off the coast of Denmark. She criticized its...
just about to fall into one of those mirthless laughs we edge away from.
It's crystalline structure for 20 minutes. Incredible.
Chorus girls have already pried open a case of vodka. Haftung, brushing hair that grows only in memory across the top of his head, rushes over to scream at them. Boys and girls, all ages, tattered and thin, trail across the brow, stevedoring. Against the fair sky, chimps swing from spars and antenna. Above them, seagulls glide by and stare. Wind rises. Soon a whitecap here and there will start to flicker out in the harbor. Each child carries a bale or box of a different shape, color, and size. Springer stands by, pince-nez clipped in front of agate eyes, checking off his inventory in a green Morocco book, snails and garlic sauce, one gross, 3 cases cognac, tennis balls, 2 dozen, 1 Victrola, film, Lucky Pierre runs amok, 3 reels, binoculars, 60, wristwatches, und so weiter, a check mark for each child. Presently, all has been stowed below decks. Chimps fall asleep. Musicians wake up. Girls surround Haftung and call him names and pinch his cheeks. Otto makes his way along the side, hauling in lines as the children cast them off. As the last one is flung away, its eye splice still in midair, framing a teardrop vista of gutted Swinemünde, Frau Knopp, sensing the release from land through her feet, gets underway in the usual manner, nearly losing a chimp over the fantail and sending Haftung's half-dozen lovelies sprawling in a winsome tangle of legs, bottoms, and breasts. Cross-currents tug at the boat as it moves out the widening funnel of the Swine toward the sea. Just inside the breakwaters, where it foams through breaches bombed underwater in the spring lookout, Frau Knab, with no change of expression, swings her wheel full over, goes barreling straight at the Sassnitz ferry, whoosh, veers away just in time, cackling at passengers staggering back from the rail, gaping after her.
"Please, Mother,"
silent Otto, plaintive in the window of the pilot house. In reply, the good woman commences bellowing a bloodthirsty sea shanty. I'm the pirate queen of the Baltic Run, and nobody fucks with me, and those who've tried are bones and skulls and lie beneath the sea, and the little fish-like messengers swim in and out their eyes, singing fuck you not with gory knop and a desperate enterprise. I'll tangle with a battleship, I'll massacre a sloop, I've sent 100 souls to hell in one relentless swoop. I've seen the Flying Dutchman, and each time we pass he cries, oh steer me clear of gory knop and a desperate enterprise. Whereupon she grips her wheel and accelerates. They find themselves now leaping toward the side of a half-sunken merchantman. Black concave iron splashed with red lead, each crusted rivet and pitted plate closing in, looming over. The woman is clearly unbalanced. Slothrop shuts his eyes and hangs on to a chorus girl. With a whoop from the pilot house, the little boat is put over hard to port, missing collision by maybe a few coats of paint. Otto, caught daydreaming of death, staggers wildly by, heading over the side. It's her sense of humor, he points out on the way past. Slothrop reaches out, grabs him by the sweater, and the girl grabs Slothrop by the tail of his tuxedo. She gets into something a little illegal, Otto a moment later catching his breath. You see what happens. I don't know what to do with her. Poor kid, the girl smiles. Ah, says Otto. Slothrop leaves them, always happy to see young people get together, and joins Von Gerl and Nerisch on the fantail. Frau Knab has angled, wallowing, around to the northwest. Presently, they are heading up the coast through white-streaked, salt-smelling Baltic. Well, where are we going, fellas? Jovial Slothrop wants to know. Nerisch stares. That is the Isle of Usedom. Von Gerl explains gently. It is bounded on one side by the Baltic Sea. It is also bounded by two rivers. Their names are the Swine and the Peene. We were just on the Swine River. We were in Swinemünde. Swinemünde means mouth of the Swine River. All right, all right. We are headed around the island of Usedom to a place that is at the mouth of the Peene River. Let's see, so that would be called, wait, Peenemünde, right? Very good. So, there is a pause. Oh, that Peenemünde. Narish, as it turns out, used to work up there. He's apt to brood some at the idea of Russians occupying the place. There was a liquid oxygen plant I had my eye on, too. Springer a little down with it himself. I wanted to start a chain. We're still angling for the one in Falkenrode at the old Goering Institute. There's a bunch of those LOX generators under Nordhausen, Slothrop trying to be helpful. Thanks, the Russians have that too, you'll recall. That's a problem. If it weren't so against nature, I'd say they don't know what they want. The roads heading east are jammed day and night with Russian lorries full of materiel, all kinds of loot, but no clear pattern to it yet beyond strip it and pack it home. Jeepers, clever Slothrop here. Do you reckon they've found that Escaret yet, huh, Mr. Van Gerl? Ah, cute, beams the Springer. He's an OSS man, groans Narish. Tell you, we ought to rub him out. Escaret's going for £10,000 these days, half of that in front. You interested? Nope, but I did hear at Nordhausen that you already have it. Wrong. Gerhardt, he's all right, Klaus. The look is one Slothrop's had before, from auto salesmen signaling their partners. Got a real idiot here, Leonard. Now don't spook him, please. We planted the story deliberately in Stettin, wanted to see how a Colonel Tcherny will respond. Fuck him again, he'll respond, all right. Well, that's what we're going up to Peenemünde today to find out. Oh, boy. Slothrop goes on to tell about the run-in at Potsdam and how Gailey thought Tcherny didn't care about rocket hardware nearly so much as working out some plot against that Oberst Enzium. If the two marketeers are interested, they don't show it. The talk has drifted on into that kind of slack, nameful recapitulating that Slothrop's mother, Nalene, loved to float away on in the afternoons. Helen Trent, Stella Dallas, Mary Noble, backstage wife. Tcherny is a complex man. It's almost as if he thinks of Enzian as another part of him, a black version of something inside himself, as something he needs to liquidate. Narish, do you think there might be some political reason? Von Gerl, shaking his head. I just don't know, Klaus, ever since what happened in Central Asia. Narish, you mean? Von Gerl, yes, the Kyrgyz light. You know, it's funny. He's never wanted to be thought of as an imperialist. Narish, none of them do, but there's the girl. Von Gerl, little gaily tripping, the one who thinks she's a witch. Narish, but do you really think she means to go through with this plan of hers to find Tcherny? Von Gerl, I think they do. Narish, but Gerhardt, he is in love with him. Von Gerl, he hasn't been dating her, has he? Narish, you can't be implying... Say, splutters Slothrop, what the heck are you guys talking about anyway? Paranoia. Springer snaps reproachfully, as folks will snap when interrupted at a game they enjoy. You wouldn't understand that. Well, excuse me, got to go vomit now. A classic comeback among charm school washouts like our tactful Tyrone here, and pretty advanced stuff on dry land, but not out here, where the Baltic is making it impossible not to be seasick. Chimps are all doing their vomiting, huddled under a tarp. Slothrop joins at the rail a miserable lot of musicians and girls. They instruct him in fine points, such as not vomiting into the wind, and timing it for when the ship rolls toward the sea, Frau Knob having expressed the hope that no one would get any vomit on her ship with the kind of glacial smile Dr. Mabuse used to get, especially on a good day. She can be heard in the pilot house now, bellowing her sea shanty. "Ooh," goes Slothrop over the side. And this is how their desperate enterprise goes a-rollicking up the coast of Usedom under a hazy summer sky. On shore, the green downs roll up in two gentle steps. Above them is a chain of hills, thick with pines and oaks. Little resort towns with white beaches and forlorn jetties wheel abeam rheumatically slow. Military-looking craft, probably Russian PT boats, will be seen now and then lying dead in the water. None challenge the Frau's passage. The sun is in and out, turning the decks of a stark moment's yellow around everyone's shadow. there's a late time of day when all shadows are thrown along the same east-northeast bearing as the test rockets were always fired out to sea from Peenemünde. The exact clock time, which varies through the year, is known as rocket noon, and the sound that must at that moment fill the air for its devout can only be compared with a noontime siren the whole town believes in, and guts resonate hard as stone. Before you sight it, you can feel the place. Even draped over a gunwale, cheek against a fender smelling of tar, eyes tearing and insides sloshing as the sea. Even barren and scorched as Rozakovsky and the White Russian army left it in the spring, it's a face. On the maps, it's a skull or a corroded face in profile facing southwest. A small marshy lake for the eye socket, nose and mouth cavity cutting in at the entrance to the Peene just below the power station. The draftsmanship is a little like a Wilhelm Busch cartoon face, some old fool for mischievous boys to play tricks on. Tapping his tanks for grain alcohol, scratching great naughty words across fields of his fresh cement, or even sneaking in to set off a rocket in the middle of the night. Low, burned-out buildings now. Ash images of camouflage nets burned onto the concrete. They had only a minute to glow like a burgher's silk mantle to light this coastal indoors, this engineer's parlor full of stodgy shapes and neutral tones. Didn't it only flare? No need to put right, nothing monitory, no new levels to be reached. But who would that be, watching so civil and mild over the model top? Face all in these chromo sunset colors, eyes inside black-rim lenses which, like the flaring nets, now are seen to have served as camouflage for who but the bicycle rider in the sky, the black and fatal Edwardian silhouette on the luminous breast of sky of today's rocket noon, two circular explosions inside the rush hour in the death scene of the sky's light. How the rider twirls up there, terminal and serene. In the tarot he is known as the Fool, but around the zone here they call him Slick. It's 1945. Still early, still innocent. Some of it is. Charred, helpless latticework. What was wooden now only settles without strength. Green human shapes flash in the ruins. The scale is very confusing along here. The troops look larger than they should. A zoo? A shooting gallery? Why, some of both. Frau Knob wallows in closer to land, proceeds up the marshy shoreline at half speed. Signs of occupation increase. Lorry parks, tents, a corral teeming with horses, pied, sorrel, snow-white, red as blood. Wild summer ducks up exploding, wet and showery out of green reeds, they swing aft over the boat and descend in its wake, where they bob quacking in two-foot excursions. High in the sunlight a white-tailed eagle is soaring. Smooth-lipped bomb and shell craters hold blue seawater. Barracks have had their roofs blown away, spinal and ribwise and sun-white, the bones of these creatures that must have held in their time half the Jonahs of falling Europe. The trees, beech and pine, have begun to grow in again where spaces were cleared and leveled for housing or offices, up through cracks in the pavement, everywhere life may gain purchase, up rushes green summer 45, and the forests are still growing dense on the upland. Passing now the great blackened remains of the development works, most of it strewn at ground level. In series, some ripped and broken, others largely hidden by the dunes, Narish reverently telling them one by one, come the concrete masses of the test stands, stations of the cross, Roman numerals 6, 5, 3, 4, 2, 9, 8, 1, finally the rocket own, from which it stood and flew at last, 7 and 10. Trees that once screened these from the sea now are only stalks of charcoal. Pulling around the northern curve of the peninsula, test stand wall and earthworks receding, moving now past Peenemünde West, the Luftwaffe's old territory. Far away to starboard, the cliffs of the Greifswalder Oye shimmer through the blue haze. Concrete launching ramps, used to test the V-1 or buzz bomb point at the sea. Runways pocked with craters, heaped with rubble and wrecked Messerschmitts swing by down the peninsula. Over the Skull's Arc, south again toward the Peene, there, above the rolling hills, miles off the port bow, the red brick tower of the cathedral in Volgast. And closer in, the half-dozen stacks of the power station, smokeless over Peenemünde, have survived the lethal compression loads of March. White swans drift in the reeds, and pheasants fly over the tall pines inland. A truck motor snarls somewhere into life. Frau Knab brings her boat around in a tight turn through an inlet to the dock. The summer calm lies over everything, rolling stock inert on its tracks. One soldier sitting against an orange-topped oil drum trying to play an accordion, maybe only fooling around. Otto lets go of his chorus girl's hand, his mother cuts the engines, and he steps broadly to the dock and jogs along, making fast. Then there's a brief pause. Diesel fumes, marsh birds, quiet idleness. Somebody's staff car racketing around the corner of a cargo shed slides to a stop, bouncing forth out of its rear door a major even fatter than Duane Marvey, but with a kindlier and dimly oriental face. Gray hair like sheep's wool comes twisting down all around his head. Ah, Pangol! Arms outstretched, wrinkled eyes shiny with... is it real tears? Pangol, my dear friend. Major Zhdaev. Springer nods, ambling over the brow, as behind the major now this truckload of troops and fatigues seems to be pulling up here. Kind of odd they should be toting those submachine guns and carbines just for some stevedoring. Right, before anyone can move, they've leaped out and made a cordon around Zhdaev and the Springer pieces at the ready. Do not be alarmed, Zhdaev, waving and beaming, strolling backward to the car with his arm around the Springer. We are detaining your friend for a bit. You may proceed with your work and go. We'll see that he gets safely back to Swinemünde. What the devil? Frau Knab comes growling out of the pilot house. Haftung shows up, twitching, putting hands in various pockets and taking them out again. Who are they arresting? What about my contract? Will anything happen to us? The staff car pulls away. Enlisted men begin filing on board. Shit, ponders Narish. You think it's a bust? I think Tichernyi is responding with interest, just as you said. Oh, now. No, no, hand on sleeve. He's right, you're harmless. Thanks. I warned him, but he laughed. Another leap, Narish. I have to keep leaping, don't I? Well, what do you want to do now, cut him loose? There is some excitement amidships. The Russians have thrown back a tarp to reveal the chimps, who are covered with vomit and have also broken into the vodka. Haftung blinks and shudders. Wolfgang is on his back, sucking at a gurgling bottle he is clutching with his feet. Some of the chimps are docile, others are looking for a fight. Somehow, Slothrop does wish the man would quit talking this way, I owe him that much. Well, I don't, Slothrop, dodging a sudden plume of yellow chimpanzee vomit. He ought to be able to take care of himself. His talk's grandiose enough, but he's not paranoid in his heart. In this line of work, that's a disaster. One of the chimps now bites a Soviet corporal in the leg. The corporal screams, unslinging his Tokayev and firing from the hip, by which time the chimp has leaped for a halyard. A dozen more of the critters, many carrying vodka bottles, head en masse for the gangplank. Don't let them get away, Haftung hollers. The trombone player sticks his head sleepily out a hatch to ask what's happening and has his face walked over by three sets of pink-soled feet before grasping the situation. Girls, spangles aflame in the afternoon sun, feathers all quivering, are being chased forward and aft by drooling Red Army personnel. Frau Knab pulls on her steam whistle, thereby spooking the rest of the chimps who join the stampede to shore. Catch them, Haftung pleads. Somebody! Slothrop finds himself between Otto and Narish, being pushed ashore over the brow by soldiers chasing after chimps or girls or trying to wrangle the cargo ashore. Among splashes, cursing, and girlish shrieks from the other side of the boat, chorus girls and musicians keep appearing and wandering back and forth. It is difficult to perceive just what the fuck is happening here. Listen, Frau Knab, leaning over the side. Trothrop notices a canny squint. You have a plan? You want to pull a diversionary feint? What, what? Chimps, musicians, dancing girls, decoys all over, while the three of you sneak in and grab their Springer. We can hide, Narish looking around gangster-eyed. Nobody will notice. Yeah, yeah, the boat can take off as if we were on board. Not me, says Slothrop. Aha, says Frau Knab. Aha, says Narish. I'll lie, too, at the northeast corner, this mad mother continues, in the channel between the little island and that triangular part that's built up on the foreshore. Hest Stand X. Catchy name. I think here'll be enough of a tide by then. Light a fire, Otto. Cast me off now. Zu befehl, Mutti. Slothrop and Narish go dash behind a cargo shed, find a boxcar, and hide inside. Nobody notices. Chimps are running by in several directions. The soldiers chasing them seem by now to be really pissed off. Someplace the clarinet player is blowing scales on his instrument. The boat's motor sputters up into a growl and screws go churning away. A while later, Otto and his girl come climb in the boxcar out of breath. Well, Narish, Slothrop might as well ask, where'd they take him, do you think, eh? From what I could see, Block 4 and that whole complex to the south were deserted. My guess is the assembly building near Test Stand 7. Under that big ellipse, there are underground tunnels and rooms ideal for a headquarters. Looks like most of it survived pretty well, even though Rosokovsky had orders to level the place. You got a piece? Neris shakes his head. No. Me neither. What kind of black market operator are you anyway? No piece. I used to be in inertial guidance. You expect me to revert? Well, what are we supposed to use then, our wits? Out the slats of the car, the sky is darkening, the clouds turning orange, tangerine, tropical. Otto and his girl are murmuring in one corner. Scrub that one, Neris with sour mouth. 5 minutes away from his mother, he's a Casanova. Otto was earnestly explaining his views on the mother conspiracy. It's not often a sympathetic girl will listen. The mothers get together once a year in secret at these giant conventions and exchange information, recipes, games, key phrases to use on their children. What did yours used to say when she wanted to make you feel guilty? I've worked my fingers to the bone, says the girl. Right, and she used to cook those horrible casseroles with the potatoes and onions and ham, little piece of ham. You see, that can't be accidental. They have a contest for Mother of the Year, breastfeeding, diaper changing. They time them, casserole competitions, yeah. Then toward the end, they actually begin to use the children. The state prosecutor comes out on stage. In a moment, Albrecht, we are going to bring your mother on. Here is a Luger fully loaded. The state will guarantee you absolute immunity from prosecution. Do whatever you wish to do, anything at all. Good luck, my boy. The pistols are loaded with blanks, natürlich, but the unfortunate child does not know this. End of side 16. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette. Side 17. Gravity's Rainbow by Thomas Pynchon. Continuing on page 589. Only the mothers who get shot at qualify for the finals. Here they bring in psychiatrists and judges sit with stopwatches to see how quickly the children will crack. Now then, Olga, wasn't it nice of Muti to break up your affair with that long-haired poet? We understand your mother and you are quite close, Hermann. Remember the time she caught you masturbating into her glove, eh? Hospital attendants stand by to drag the children off, drooling, screaming, having chronic convulsions. Finally, there is only one mother left on stage. They put the traditional flowered hat on her head and hand her the orb and scepter, which in this case are a gilded pot roast and a whip. And the orchestra plays Tristan und Isolde. They come out into the last of the twilight. Just a sleepy summer evening in Peenemünde. A flight of ducks passes overhead going west. No Russians around. A single bulb burns over the entrance to the cargo shed. Otto and his girl wander hand in hand along the dock. An ape comes scampering up to take Otto's free hand. To north and south, the Baltic keeps unrolling low white waves. "What's happening?" asks the clarinet player. "Have a banana," tuba player with his mouth full has a good-sized bun stowed in the bell of his axe. Night is down by the time they get started. They head inland, Springer's crash-out party along the railroad tracks. Pine trees tower to either side of the cinder embankment. Ahead, fat pinto rabbits scurry, only their white patches visible. No reason to suppose rabbits is what they are. Otto's friend Hilda comes gracefully down out of the woods with his cap that she's filled to the brim with round berries, dusty blue, sweet. The musicians are packing vodka bottles in every available pocket. That's tonight's meal, and Hilda, kneeling alone at the berry bushes, has whispered grace for them all. In the marshes now you can hear the first peepers start up, and the high-frequency squeals of a bat out hunting and some wind in the upper trees. Also, from farther away, a shot or two. "Are they firing at my apes?" Haftung chatters. "That's 2,000 marks apiece. How am I ever going to get that back?" The family of mice go dashing across the tracks and right over Slothrop's feet. "I was expecting just a big cemetery. I guess not." "When we came, we only cleared out what we needed to," Neris recalls. "Most of it stayed, the forest, the life. There are probably still deer up in there someplace. Big fellows with dark antlers. And the birds, snipes, coots, wild geese. The noise from the testing drove them out to sea, but they'd always come back in when it was quiet again." Before they reach even the airfield, they have to scatter twice into the woods, first for a security patrol, then for a steam engine come puffing up from Peenemünde East, its headlight cutting through a fine night haze, some troops with automatics hanging onto steps and ladders. Steel grinding and creaking by in the night, the men shooting the breeze as they pass, no feeling of tension to it. They might be after us anyway, Nerys whispers. Come on. Through a patch of woods and then cautiously out onto the open airfield. The sharp sickle of moon has risen. Apes scuttle along in the bone light, arms dangling. It's a nervous passage. Everybody's a perfect target. There's no cover except for airplanes strafed where they stood into relics. Rusted stringers, burned paint, gull wings driven back into the earth. Lights from the old Luftwaffe complex glow to the south. Trucks purr now and then along the road at the far edge of the airfield. They're singing from the barracks and, someplace, a radio. The evening news from somewhere, too far to hear the words or even the language, only the studious monotone. The news, Swarthrop, going on without you. They make it across the tarmac to the road and crouch in a drainage ditch listening for traffic. Suddenly to their left, yellow runway lights come on, a double row of them chaining to the sea, brightness bouncing up and down a couple 3 times before it settles in. Somebody coming in, Swarthrop guesses. More likely going out, snaps Nerys. We'd better hurry. Back in the pine woods now, heading up a road of packed dirt toward Test Stand 7, they start to pick up stray girls and chimpanzees. Pine smells wrap them. Old needles lie at the margins of the road. Downhill, lights appear as the trees begin thinning out, then the test stand area comes in view. The assembly building is something like 100 feet high. It blocks out the stars. There's a tall, bright band where sliding doors are open and light scatters outside. Nerys grabs Slothrop's arm. It looks like the Major's car, and the motor's running. A lot of searchlights, too, set up on fences topped with barbed wire, also what looked like a division of security roaming around. Guess this is it, Slothrop, a little nervous. Shh. Sound of a plane. A single-engine fighter, circling to make its approach low over the pines. Not much time. Nerys gathers the others around and issues his orders. Girls are to go in from the front, singing, dancing, vamping the woman-hungry barbarians. Otto will try to knock out the car. Haftung will get everybody rounded up and ready to rendezvous with the boat. Tits and ass, mutter the girls. Tits and ass, that's all we are around here. Ah, shut up, snarls GMB Haftung, which is his usual way of dealing with the help. Meanwhile, continues Nerys, Slothrop and I will go in after Springer. When we have him, we'll try to get them to shoot. That will be your signal to run like hell. Oh, definitely some shooting, says Slothrop. Hey, and how about this? He has just had a brilliant idea. Fake Molotov cocktails. A switch on Zoyra Boomer's old routine. He holds up a vodka bottle, pointing and grinning. But that stuff won't even hardly burn. But they'll think it's gasoline. Beginning to pluck ostrich feathers from the costume of the nearest girl. And just imagine how secure it will make us feel. Felix, the clarinet player asks the tuba player, what have we fallen among? Felix is eating a banana and living for the moment. Presently he has wandered off in the woods with the rest of the band where they can be heard moving around in circles, tootling and blatting at each other. Hilda and Slothrop are making phony firebombs. The other girls have taken off. Sitz und Arsch, downslope. So we'll present a plausible threat, Nerys whispers. We'll need matches. Who's got matches? Not me. Me either. Gee, my lighter's out of flints. Cut, Nerys, throwing up his hands. Cut, walking off into the trees where he collides with Felix and his tuba. You don't have any matches either. I have a Zippo, replies Felix, and 2 Corona Coronas from the American Officers Club in... A minute later, Nerys and Slothrop, hands each cupped around the coal of one of Havana's finest, are sneaky-peeting like 2 cats in a cartoon off toward Test Stand 7. With vodka bottle bombs stuck in their belts and ostrich feather wicks trailing behind in the sea breeze. The plan is to climb the pine-topped sand and scrub embankment around the test stand and come in on the assembly building from behind. Now Nerys hears a guidance man. A guidance man is he. And every day at rocket noon there's death and revelry. But Nerys has managed in his time to avoid nearly all of it. In fact, no 2 people have been so ill-equipped to approach a holy center since the days of Chicherny and Jakip Kulan hauling ass over the steppe into the north to find their Kyrgyz light. That's about 10 years gap, giving this pastime about the same vulnerability to record breakers as baseball, a sport also well spidered with white suggestions of the sinister. Holy Center approaching is soon to be the number 1 zonal pastime. Its balmy heyday is nearly on it. Soon more champions, adepts, magicians of all ranks and orders will be in the field than ever before in the history of the game. The sun will rule all enterprise if it be honest and sporting. The Gauss curve will herniate toward the excellent. And tankers the likes of Nerish and Slothrop here will have already been weeded out. Slothrop, as noted, at least as early as the Anubis era, has begun to thin, to scatter. Personal density, Kurt Montaugen in his Peenemünde office not too many steps away from here, enunciating the law which will one day bear his name, is directly proportional to temporal bandwidth. Temporal bandwidth is the width of your present, your now. It is the familiar delta T, considered as a dependent variable. The more you dwell in the past and in the future, the thicker your bandwidth, the more solid your persona. But the narrower your sense of now, the more tenuous you are. It may get to where you're having trouble remembering what you were doing 5 minutes ago, or even, as Slothrop now, what you're doing here, at the base of this colossal curved embankment. He turns slack-mouthed to Nerish. What are we?
What are we what?
What? You said, what are we? Then you stopped. Oh, gee, that was a funny thing to say. As for Nerish, he's too locked into business. He has never seen this great ellipse any other way but the way he was meant to. Greta Erdmann, on the contrary, saw the rust-covered eminences here bow exactly as they did once in expectancy, faces hooded, smooth cowlings of nothing. Each time Tanatz brought the whip down on her skin, she was taken off on another penetration toward the center, each lash a little farther in, till someday, she knows, she will have that first glimpse of it. And from then on, it will be an absolute need, a ruling target. Whack! The bone-black trestling of water towers above, bent to the great rim, visible above the trees in light that's bleak and bruised purple, as Peenemünde sunsets in the chill, slow firing weather. A long look from the top of some known low country dike into a sky flowing so even and yellow to brown that the sun could be anywhere behind it, and the crosses of the turning windmills could be spoke blurs of the terrible rider himself, Slothrop's rider, his two explosions up there, his celestial cyclist. No, but even that only flickers now briefly across a bit of Slothropian lobe terrain and melts into its surface, vanishing. So here passes for him one more negligence, and likewise groweth his preterition sure. There is no good reason to hope for any turn, any surprise. I see it, not from Slothrop. Here he is, scaling the walls of an honest ceremonial plexus, set down on a good enough vision of what's shadowless noon and what isn't. But oh, egg the flying rocket hatched from navel of the 50-meter radio sky, all proper ghosts of place, forgive him his numbness, his glozing neutrality. Forgive the fist that doesn't tighten in his chest, the heart that can't stiffen in any greeting. Forgive him as you forgave Chicherinia at the Kyrgyz light. Better days are coming. Slothrop is listening to faraway peripatetic tuba and clarinet, being joined in on now by trombone and tenor sax, trying to pick up a tune, and to the bursts of laughter from soldiers and girls. Sounds like a party down there. Maybe even some stag dames. Say, why don't we, what was your... Nerish leather scarecrow, trying to ignore Slothrop's behavior, has decided to dismantle his firebomb. He uncorks the vodka and waves it under his nose before taking a belt. He beams, cynical, salesman-wise, up at Slothrop. Here. A silence under the white wall. Oh, yes, I was thinking it was gasoline, but then it's fake, so it's really vodka, right? But just over the embankment, down in the arena, what might that have been just now, waiting in this broken moonlight, camouflage paint from fins to point, crazed into jigsaw? Is it, then, really never to find you again? Not even in your worst times of night, with pencil words on your page, only delta T from the things they stand for? And inside, the victim is twitching, fingering beads, touching wood, avoiding any operational word. Will it really never come to take you now? Near the water towers, they have started to climb up toward the rim. Sand leaks into their shoes and hisses away down the slope. At the top, back through the trees, they get a quick look at the lighted runway, the fighter now landed, surrounded by ground crew shadows, fueling, servicing, turning her around. Down the peninsula, lights glow in patches, curves, zigzags, but over on this side, from the old development works south, it's pitch black. They push through pine branches and down again into the egg, sacked of its German hardware, long converted to a Russian motor pool. The corner of the huge assembly building, as they come down, rises to face them across 100 yards of jeeps and lorries. Down to the right is a 3 or 4 level test frame with a round kind of Quonset top, and underneath the frame is a long pit shaped like a shallow